Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Tonight, Trevor Harris takes over and has a terrific program for us with National Train Day on the way this weekend. We'll look into the history of railroads and rail travel in mid-Missouri. Now, while you can still travel to St. Louis or Kansas City and beyond on Amtrak out of Jefferson City, rail travel here in Columbia really isn't happening much anymore. But there is a rich history to Columbia, Mizzou, and trains. And we'll get some great stories from the heyday of the old Colt Line that ran from what we now know as Wabash Station north to Centralia. Talking trains tonight. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Trevor Harris is going to be our host this evening. He's got a terrific program lined up. We're going to hear from an author who's written a new book about the old Colt Line Railroad. It's the railroad that ran from Columbia to Centralia. And until very recently, was still running, but mostly just bringing freight back and forth. But for a long time, it ran passengers. And it was a part of a whole network of smaller train systems that brought an awful lot of people to Columbia, including a lot of students who came here to go to school at the University of Missouri. So we'll look forward to hearing some of those stories as well from folks who remember their time coming to Columbia on the train to go to school here at Old Mizzou. Trevor Harris tonight, the host. It's Thinking Out Loud.
If you aren't a mid-Missouri native, how did you first come to the region? Chances are you arrived by car or maybe bus. Well, for over a century, the dominant mode that mid-Missourians accessed Columbia by was rail, and specifically, they came on the Wabash. My name is Trevor Harris, and this week on KBIA's Thinking Out Loud, we look at the history of passenger rail in Boone County, and specifically, the Columbia Branch Railroad. When the University of Missouri was established in Columbia in 1839, access was largely by water. Each year, University of Missouri-bound students and new faculty would travel by boat to Providence Landing near present-day McBain. After disembarking, travelers would make the about 9-mile trip into Columbia. Some made their trip completely by land in horse-drawn coaches on the Boonslick Trail as it ran west through Boone County from its origins in St. Charles County. While railroad construction boomed in the middle years of the 19th century across America, it wasn't until after the Civil War that Columbia itself was served by rail. In 1851, the North Missouri Railroad was established, linking St. Charles with the Iowa border. Early plans to run the North Missouri Railroad through Columbia were scuttled by Callaway County landowners who objected to the line passing near their properties. Some Callawayans feared that runaway slaves would hop freight cars and escape to freedom. Skirting Callaway County, the North Missouri Railroad eventually passed through Centralia before swinging northwards towards Iowa. After the Civil War, Columbia leaders focused on establishing a connection to the North Missouri Railroad. Such a link would eventually bring business to Columbia, as well as a rail route for student passengers to access Columbia. The new line would also move freight, including coal. Following an 1866 groundbreaking, the Columbia Branch Railroad was open for business by the end of the following year. Columbia historian Marty Patton published a book on the Columbia Branch Railroad in 2012. Patton recently discussed with me why he was personally interested in the research that supported this book.
My great-great-great-grandfather helped to build the North Missouri Railroad from St. Charles up through Sturgeon, and then he quit and got and lived in Sturgeon for about a year, and that's when it was literally being laid out as a little town. And then he moved to the Brown Station area. After the Civil War, he helped to build the Columbia Branch Railroad. And so that's, it's been a part of my entire life. My grandma used to talk about it, you know, riding the train, my mom, my dad, and so on.
I asked Marty Patton where the demand initially came from for the Columbia Branch Railroad.
The State University was established in 1839. And so you had to have a way for students to get from the river, Missouri River, in, you know, Providence or Roachport. They did build a road, and I guess, you know, it wasn't a very good road. You know, rocky, muddy, that kind of thing. Very hard to get from there to the university. So they had this great idea of building a plank road, and I believe that was in the 1840s. And of course, you know, it didn't work out well. The wood rotted, and it, you know, it wasn't a very smooth ride if you're in a wagon, that kind of thing. Basically, the railroad began to thrive in the 1840s, and it was given you know, steamboats and you know, river boats, that kind of thing, you know, some competition, if you will. So by the 1850s, railroads were really starting to be built mainly on the East Coast, obviously. And so by the 1860s, rail was the major mode of transportation. Obviously, freight and passenger service has always been about the same up until the 1950s. And so really the heyday of the railroad was between 1880 and 1940. There's three things that, you know, adjectives that I use to describe this branch during its heyday. It's, let's say, 80 years, its first 80 years. And the three is busy, dangerous, and slow. And believe it or not, you're talking about how many people took passenger trains during that period of time. At one time, there were 14 trains every day on this little 21-mile branch railroad. We're talking tens of thousands of people each year that took the Wabash line, and, you know, thousands that took the MKT line. You got the big thing about the Columbia branch, both branches, were that you had the University of Missouri, you had Christian College, and you had Stevens College. And so you had an enormous amount of people, you know, coming to Columbia, mainly students, but also, you know, business people, as well as you had a lot of college specials. You had circus trains, just different things. So we're talking, I would say, over 1 million people on the Wabash line alone during its history. If not 1 million, it was definitely 1 million with both lines, the MKT and the Columbia branch.
That was Marty Patton, author of the 2012 book, The Columbia Branch Railroad. My name is Trevor Harris, and on this week's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA, I examine the long history of Columbia's Short Line Railroad. It was from 1867 to 1969 that the Columbia Branch Railroad moved thousands of University of Missouri, Christian, then Columbia College, and Stevens College students, as well as business people and tourists, back and forth to Centralia, where they met and boarded connecting trains to the east, west, and north. A connection from Columbia to Jefferson City was not established until the Missouri, Kansas, and Texas Railroad built their spur from McBain to Columbia in 1901. The competing MKT and Wabash rail lines served riders through the late 1960s. Again, here's Marty Patton discussing the stops on the old Columbia Branch Railroad and detailing the discontent of Hallsville area residents who found the siting of the stop near their town to be inadequate.
So the stations along the line were Centralia, Bush Station, then you had Hickman, which was about 1 mile south of Hallsville, and then you had Brown Station, Stevens Station, Persinger Station, and then Columbia. I believe there were 16 stations during the history of its history. Which, by the way, of course, the Columbia branch is in its 147th year of consistent operation. So within a decade, you had Bush Station, and then you had Hallsville, Hickman, Brown Station, Persinger Station, and Switzer, and then you had about 1 mile or two from the downtown area, you had Moore's Switch. There were other stations that existed in between that time as well.
You think there was some politicking that went on to get a stop at a various spot?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yes. One of the first things that occurred was the citizens of Hallsville were extremely irate with the Boone County and Jefferson City Railroad Company, which was the company that built the Columbia branch. And the reason why they were irate was because the contractors who were building the railroad were going to put a depot at Hallsville. Well, then they changed their mind to make a little more money on the side. They decided to build this new little town called Hickman, which, by the way, was named after David H. Hickman, who Hickman High School is named for as well. He was the president of the Boone County and Jefferson City Railroad Company. They were very irate. Railroad was going to build a new depot on Hickman, the site of Hickman, instead of Hallsville. So they actually sued, the citizens of Hallsville sued the railroad company, but they lost. And to make a really long story short, years later, people around Hallsville decided that they weren't going to patronize Hickman Station, that they would go clear to Centray if they had to. So what they did was, is they basically didn't support Hickman. There were always complaints about the depot at Hickman. It was like a shack, according to reports that I've read. So anyway, a year or two after Hickman was established, the depot started to deteriorate there. And within a couple of decades, it mysteriously burned down.
While there are economic and social benefits, no infrastructure project is without its environmental impacts. The building of the Columbia Branch Railroad brought passenger rail service to Columbia in 1867. Over time, the line also brought freight into Columbia and took materials from Boone County, most notably coal. Here's local historian and author Marty Patton discussing perhaps the most extractive chapter of the Columbia Branch Railroad's history, mining for coal in northern Boone County.
The late 50s and early 60s, when Peabody Coal came to Boone County, in northern Boone County near the Brown Station area. Then, of course, they put a spur line off of the Columbia Branch, and it went due west for 3 or 4 miles. And, of course, that was open mining, so it completely destroyed the topography of the land and so on. But, of course, they made a park out of it. So that was the major environmental issue, if you will.
Finger Lakes.
Finger Lakes State Park. Right. Mm-hmm.
So all the lakes of Finger Lakes State Park were open strip pits?
Exactly. Yes.
They over time have filled in with water?
Right. Mm-hmm.
As private automobiles became more common in the 1950s, rail service declined, not just in Columbia, but across the United States. Locally, the Columbia Branch Railroad operated as the Wabash from 1872 to 1964. The line's final private operator was Norfolk and Western, who bought the line in 1964, operating it until 1969, when passenger operations along the line ceased.
With the advent of the automobile, passenger service started to decline in the 50s. And within that one decade, from 1950 to 1960, it really declined because people were able to afford, you know, a car, and it was more convenient for them to travel by automobile than by, you know, rail. The decline basically began in the 50s, and by the end of passenger service in America occurred in April of 1969. The Columbia Branch Railroad from here in Boone County, passenger service ended April 18th, 1969. We also, of course, had the Columbia branch of the MKT from Columbia to McBain, and that passenger service for the MKT basically ended in the 50s, 1950s.
This week on KBIA's Thinking Out Loud, we're looking back at the Columbia Branch Railroad. Here's some thoughts and memories from longtime Columbia resident Hal Schaefer.
My name is Hal Schaefer. I'm a retired extension and research assistant professor at the University of Missouri. I've worked at the university 39 years, and I've been retired about 14 years now, and been interested in trains all my life.
Where did that interest come from?
Well, it's interesting. I was born in 1937, but my dad, at Christmas of 1936, bought a train set expecting me to arrive before Christmas, so I had a Christmas present, but I didn't get here until January, so my interest in trains and modeling goes way back to before I was born. And my dad used to, during World War II, carried fuel oil up to the trains in the St. Louis area during World War II. And so my interest in trains, I had a great-grandfather who ran a short line in Keosauqua, Iowa, and my grandpa and all his eight brothers ran trains there. So my interest in trains goes back a long time.
Yeah. Now, do you still have the 1936 train set?
I do have. Matter of fact, it's pretty old now. Yeah, it's, I actually do. It's not in real good shape. I rode a train back to Wabash. I don't know what the night train was called. It came to Centralia. And one night I was riding the train back, and I got off, and it was kind of an eerie, spooky kind of night, and the dim lights on the station platform were there, and there was a baggage car, and they pushed this thing, a Railway Express cart, up to the baggage door, and I thought, oh, no, they're going to get a casket. And they did get a casket off that car, the baggage car, the main line, and loaded it onto that cart, and next thing I knew, they put it on the train in Columbia, and I thought, it's just like a movie or something. And then they had it on the baggage car in front of us, and two ladies, a little bit older and younger lady, were together, I assume, a mother and daughter. As we sat in the train all the way to Columbia, we could see that casket through the open doors swaying back and forth on the track. It was one of the strangest nights I ever had in my life, I think. And that was my experience. And I have ridden it some other times, too. I know our kids, we took our kids, actually, Key and Diane Groshon, Melvin, myself, took our children on a train trip when I knew that the end of the Wabash branch was passenger service was coming to an end. And we're not sure the date. I know the train passenger service ended on April 18th, 1969. We assume it was in 68 we rode a train. And our kids were quite little at that time. I used to follow the trains. You know, I always watched them. They went near where I live.
What was the experience like of riding the Wabash from Columbia to Centralia or back from Centralia?
You know, it was a branch line. It didn't go fast. The scenery was nice. And you can actually relive that now if you take the dinner train, because the dinner train takes that same track. They leave her about, I've ridden it once late in the evening for dinner, and you ride to Centralia, I think it is, and turn eat dinner and come back. It's very similar. There was not a, you know, there's not a lot of scenery. There used to be a lot of coal hopper cars in the branch when they started mining all up around, I'm not sure, is that up around Hallsville, where the big strip mines were, and they had a lot of coal cars setting on sidings.
So would the trains be mixed? Would they be passenger and a freight car together, or exclusively passenger and freight?
No, actually, Trevor, in those years, they ran three passenger trains a day. They met each train coming from east to west and west to east on the Wabash. And so that was, they always ran a baggage car and a coach. As I mentioned, my experience with a baggage car and coach in the Columbia branch. Now, they may have run some mix, but mostly it was three passenger trains scheduled, and then three meaning, you know, three in each direction round trip, and then mostly freight. Now they just carry freight on the coal terminal train.
Now, I would think during your days riding the train, as the Wabash was near the end of its run, even if there were three a day, I'm guessing that there weren't dozens and dozens of cars. There was probably an engine and maybe, what, two or three passenger cars behind?
Yes, an engine and a baggage car and a passenger car, yeah. Roger Duffield and myself and built a model railroad based on the Wabash yard downtown in Columbia. And that was in the Bryn Missouri Railfan's been around a long time. They're still here today. And we actually built a layout based on the Wabash branch. We called it the Columbia Northern, and modeled with what kits were on the market to try to match up to what was on the branch here in Columbia. The Mid-Missouri Railfan, as I mentioned, had been around a long time, and we were asked to do a setup for a Orient Express movie at the Missouri Theater, and good friends of mine, Steve Mosman, who was a railfan, and his wife, Dee, and my wife, Melba, and myself, built a neat little module display for the theater, and we got passes to the Orange Express train. Actually, our wives and kids went to it. It was pretty neat. And Mike Van Hove is around now. I actually had the engine and cars we put on that display.
Free tickets to the show is the least they could do for your
right. You're probably right. And, you know, we were excited. We were happy. We loved the model. Steve had this really neat old bridge. It didn't exist in Columbia, but a really neat bridge that made our scene. And we loved doing scenery. Some of our early days of making model railroad scenery for real.
Today, when we think about taking passenger rail in this country and we visualize Amtrak, if you've ridden on Amtrak, you know, it's a certain experience. It's two levels of passenger cars. You can ride up or ride down, and there's usually many cars, maybe 8, 10 cars. There's a dining car. There's an observation car. That wasn't the Wabash that you rode in the 1960s.
Well, you have to back up, though. In the 1950s, I used to ride a Bluebird from St. Louis to Chicago. That was in the mid-50s. I went to camp in Michigan, Camp Minnewanka, which is sponsored by Christmas Carols Association in St. Louis, and we rode a Bluebird. And then from there, we got into Chesapeake in Ohio and rode. And I had a super experience as a young boy. One night, we rode on a diner, and a gentleman, they set us at three guys and myself sat at a dinner table and one night going to Chicago, and we got a nice meal, and lo and behold, he paid for our meal. And that same trip, we got to get in the engine, the cab of the engine, and ride for some distance till we had to get off before we got caught.
Have you ever hopped on a train hobo style?
No, never. No.
They don't smile on that.
Pardon me?
They don't take a smile to that. They don't.
Oh,
like
no,
that.
No. Well, you know, all the security and all the threats, you better not be around the railroad yard anymore. The railroad detectives will pick you up. It used to be you could wander around railroad yards. You really don't do that anymore.
So it sounds like your experience riding the rails in the 50s and 60s, it was as comfortable, maybe more so, than it is now. That there was dining cars and there was observation cars and people. It was a kind of a collegial atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, the St. Louis the Bluebird St. Louis to Chicago was quite a crack train. It had, you know, a new modern big E8 big diesel engine and cars. We caught the train out of St. Louis. And then I used to ride to Pennsylvania to go to see my aunt and uncle in New Jersey and my cousin after they moved there in the early 50s. We rode coach and we'd sleep in our coach. And I remember that trip at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. They always changed to electric engine before they went to New York. And in the middle of the night, they'd wake you up no matter what, banging, uncoupling, and so forth. It was always fun at night when the lights were flashing, you know, the grade crossings and all that sort of thing. It was always neat. And the reflection of the train lights onto the buildings as you went by. Yeah, it's quite an experience.
So the experience of riding the Wabash, you would get on at the Wabash station in downtown Columbia, which has now been the bus station for many years.
Uh-huh.
And the tracks came right up to the back door.
That's true. There was because I'm out of that area, there was a train track in there, and they would drop their two coaches off and run the engine around it and take it up to the where they kept it at night. That, I didn't mention that George Drake, who was a friend of mine and a Missouri rail fan guy, was actually the roundhouse foreman, I think they called him, in Columbia. And he was here in the days of steam trains and the first diesels, and he was quite a photographer. And I have a few of his pictures, you know, 8x10 or 10x whatever. They're hanging in my basement downstairs of a freight train coming in to Columbia behind a Wabash J462 engine. Doesn't mean much to most people, but it was a kind of engine they used on branches. And that's kind of neat. There was actually where the tracks now cross College Avenue, there was at one time a track and a turntable down there to turn the engine around. When steam, you always ran it forward. I mean, you could back it up, but the running distance you wanted to see forward. And they used to turn that engine and then go back to the station and pick up the cars for the next trip, as I said, three times a day.
And after 21 miles, you'd roll into Centralia. Mm-hmm. What was the experience like there? The station is gone now.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because the whole train would go on a sidetrack beside the main line, and they would turn what they called a Y, if you imagine a Y, and then put a straight line across the top. You have a Y on the railroad. And they would actually Y the train there, back it up, turn around, and head back to Columbia using that Y to make it go, you know, the front end and come back to Columbia. And the only time they really took the engine off to turn around was when they got to Columbia. And the scenery is, you know, central Missouri scenery, farmland and small town like Hallsville or Centralia, of course. I think you said the station isn't there. I don't think it is there anymore, but I think the tracks may still be there, just like they were.
So if you rode from Columbia to Centralia and you transferred, where would most people go? What was their final destination? Not Centralia.
No, I mean St. Louis or Kansas City. And actually, the Wabash ended in Kansas City, and then you would get onto the Union Pacific and go out west. You know, and of course, eventually, I guess that's all Norfolk. Southern may still be separate, but I know Union Pacific was where we ride. And so probably Chicago was one end, and Kansas City would have been the other. And as I said, we went on to Muskegon, Michigan on the Chesapeake in Ohio.
That was longtime Columbia resident Hal Schaefer sharing his thoughts and memories on taking the Wabash line from Centralia into Columbia. While passenger service on the Norfolk and Western into Columbia
ended in the late 1960s, freight service into Columbia continued and continues. It continued under Norfolk and Western through 1978. It was at that time that city leaders became concerned about maintaining a line into the city for coal for the municipal power plant. The city approached the rail line's final private operator about purchasing the Wabash Station and the 21-mile line from Centralia into downtown Columbia. After negotiations ended in 1987, the city came out as the new owner of a railroad. Final sales price, just under $600,000. Not bad for a railroad, including tracks, trains, and a station. Freight operations continue to this day on what's now known as the Colt Line, as they have since 1867 when the Columbia branch opened. Primary customers include the City of Columbia itself, Boone County Lumber, and Mid-City Lumber Companies. Interested in riding the rails of Columbia's Colt Line? You're in luck. Since 2011, the Columbia Star Dinner Train has leased access to the Colt Lines for weekly dinner train rides to Centralia and back. More information about the Columbia Star Dinner Train is available online at dinnertrain.com, and more information about local historian and author Marty Patton is available on his website, columbiabranchrailroad.com. Finally, this Saturday, May the 10th, is National Train Day. While no events are planned in mid-Missouri, train aficionados will gather at La Plata, Missouri's Amtrak station this Saturday from 9 till noon. The event includes historical railroad photos. You can also see the Northeast Missouri Model Railroad Association operating their train layout at the station, which is located at 535 North Owensby Street in La Plata. La Plata is located 14 miles south of Kirksville on Highway 63. For Thinking Out Loud and for KBIA, this is Trevor Harris.
From New York to St. Louis and Chicago, by the way. From the hills of Minnesota where the rippling waters fall. No changes can be taken on that Wabash cannonball. Here's to Daddy Claxton, may his name forever stand. And always be remembered round the courts of Alabama. His earthly race is over and the curtains round him fall. We'll carry him home to victory on the Wabash Cannonball. The jingle, the rumble, and the roar as she glides along the woodland through the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of the engineer, that lonesome hobo's call. You're traveling through the jungles on the Wabash Cannonball.
And that is our program for this evening, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Our thanks once again to Trevor Harris, who's done a terrific job for us and brought us another very interesting program this evening. Be sure to tune in every Tuesday evening for Thinking Out Loud here on KBIA. We have a few weeks left before we go on our annual summer hiatus and some really neat stuff lined up. So listen in for that. Also, be sure to tune in Saturday mornings as we bring you Thinking Out Loud Saturday Sports from 6 until 7 o'clock. And you can catch past programs at the website kbiasports.org. In the meantime, for Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.